Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Now, you say the WGN TV and radio teams are participating in the American Lung Association's Fight for Air Climb?
That is correct.
It's going on right now, right?
Mm-hmm. They're at Soldier Field, and that's going on, and also the half marathon. There's a half marathon around Grant Park, and they're setting up for the Sueños Music Festival.
Oh, yeah.
A lot going on down there.
It's that time of year in Chicago.
Yes, it is.
It's that time of year.
Your favorite.
I love outdoor activities.
Just as long as they don't get in your way, right?
I'm a little offended we were not invited to be part of the air climb team.
We could have done the show there.
Yeah, did we see the show from there?
The event is going on while we're on the air.
Yeah.
Who's the most logical team to be out there but us?
Right. The Sunday morning crew.
Yeah. I would have made some flimsy excuse. Written a check and sent Andy.
But. Yeah, right. I'm not going to commit
today. You're right. I need my exercise.
But it's a worthy cause.
Who's on the team?
I think Dave Ennett's out there.
Ennett, yeah, no, Dave has taken
Dave's
part for years. Yeah.
I think Mary Vandeville might be out there as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, we did remotes, presidential towers for this earlier on, didn't we, a few years ago?
Yeah, we were in our little room. Yeah.
For the American Lung Association.
Is that this or some other event that they do?
I think it was this.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great organization. But we used to go over to Presidential Towers, and they would climb up and down all the towers to raise money.
Right. And we would be off to the side.
And we would sit in the little room.
In our glass encased room, yes.
Eating donuts.
Exactly right.
And that is where you had the foresight to bring in original rainbow cone.
Right.
And that was my first time.
Remember we had pizza?
And we had Vito and Nick's pizza.
We brought in some good food.
Talk about Chicago institutions. My.
Taunting all those show off athletes. We've got pizza.
Na 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 na.
You're just sweaty.
And then we have ice cream. I scream, you scream, we all scream for ice cream.
On the TV side, Lourdes Duarte is heading up the team.
Okay.
Alyssa Donovan, Courtney Spinelli. Who else? On the TV side, hang on, I guess the Lourdes sent a. Lourdes actually did invite us all.
Oh.
Alyssa Donovan. Mike Lowe, who I do not believe is actually at the event this year because he had some pretty serious news that he announced this week that he's been diagnosed with stage 3 colon cancer. We're going to talk to Mike later in the show. But he was originally scheduled to be on the team. Mike is another one who is all these events. Mike is first in line to do all these things. So we'll talk with Mike Lowe later on, but so that's going on. Can people donate just by sitting around?
I would imagine there's a website for it that they could check. Sure. American Lung Association, Fight for Air Climb.
Actually, if you go to WGN Radio, it is fightforairclimb.org.
There you go. Yeah.
/Chicago. But if you go to WGNradio.com, it'll give you the information.
There's a link there also.
Yep.
Yeah, okay.
It's under the headline, Morning Show, Not Everyone Invited, except everyone on the morning show. And the winner, 47th Annual Peter Lissagor Award. The category, Best Feature Reporting Single Story. And the winner, Dave Schwann.
Yeah.
WGN Radio. Congratulations.
Thank you so very much. And congratulations also to John Williams and Pete Zimmerman, because they won Best Interview for the story on how the Daily Northwestern paper broke the Pat Fitzgerald hazing story. We had three other nominees also. Best Political and Government Reporting, Lisa Dent, Steve Bertrand, Brian Altimer, and Andrew Harris were nominated for talking about the Illinois Sheriff's Association and the assault weapons ban.
Yeah.
And also another nomination for John and Pete, Best Political and Government Reporting, Governor Pritzker, and Bob Surratt in the morning team with Joe Romano and Haley Boyd nominated for Best Arts and Entertainment Reporting.
Yeah. Oh.
They did a story on John Oates of Hall & Oates. Those were the... We had five nominees, but very, very grateful and honored to win this award.
Are you done? Because I haven't... I wanted to explain what the Peter Lissagor Awards are.
All right.
Now
yes,
that you're
I'm
a
done.
Big, fancy winner, you think you'd just take over the place. Look, it says Dave Schwann on the plaque. It doesn't say Schwanny.
No, it doesn't.
That's the first problem.
And they spelled it right, too.
That's the first problem. The plaque that you got, very impressive, should say Peter Lissagor Award presented to Schwanny, WGN Radio. Not Dave Schwann. Not David Schwann.
No.
Schwanny is what it should say.
Should just say Schwanny.
Schwanny. Yeah. Schwanny.
Yeah. Schwanny.
Yeah. See? Schwanny. See?
Hello.
Schwanny.
Timmy.
The Peter Lissagor Awards are, it's a very, very prestigious award here in Chicago. It's given out for exemplary journalism. Handed out 200 members of local media, judge all the entries that are submitted, and journalists outside of the state of Illinois, so they're impartial, you know, decide on what the winner should be. So it's a big deal, journalism award for Chicago journalists in print. Are they still doing journalism in print?
Yes, they are. And there were many print journalists that won.
Is that still going on?
Yeah,
really?
Yeah, it is. You just sit in your little cubbyhole and are unaware of the fact that there's a lot going on.
I thought they stopped all that print stuff in about 1979.
You're the one that's wondering why you don't hear extra read all about it when you walk down the street,
I'm
right?
I'm looking for Timmy the Long Chevrolet Kid to give me a newspaper. Back in the old days.
Kid
don't even
gets
get me
pie
started
in
on
face.
That. Hey, you know what? Speaking of newspaper, our pal Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune.
Mm-hmm.
Remember we used to be associated with them before they kicked us out? he also won Peter Lissagor Award. I was looking at the list of all the winners, and I see our pal Rick Pearson's name on there. So,
yep. As a matter of fact,
congrats to him.
It was Rick who helped get me underway to cover the story that we won for.
Oh, see,
there you go.
Yeah.
See. Reaching down, helping others.
Yeah, oh, yeah. And, I had known about this the story for a while, but then he told me about something that was going on, updating it.
So tell us the story. Tell us what did you win?
It revolves around a town that is no longer in existence in western Illinois, but it's a fascinating story as to how it came about and a fascinating story as to why it's being recognized nationally now.
Mm-hmm.
The town was called New Philadelphia.
Hmm.
It was started by a person who was born into slavery in Kentucky in the 1700s. He bought his freedom. He was able to work out a deal with the person, it's amazing to say this, that owned him, and worked out a deal to buy his freedom. It cost him something like $800. That was a lot of money back then, but he was determined to do it, bought his freedom, came to Illinois from Kentucky, and set up the town that he called New Philadelphia. And according to his great-great-grandson, who we interviewed for this story, the reason he called it New Philadelphia was because there was a free area of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, that he knew about. But we talked to his great-great-granddaughter, his great-great-grandson, and the people who are in Western Illinois that were determined to make this nationally recognized, and their efforts have now paid off because it's part of the National Park Service now.
Very nice.
And going to be included in all of Illinois. It's going to be part of the Lincoln Heritage area also.
Yep.
Quick, fascinating point. The man's name was Frank McWhorter. He was given his last name by the Illinois legislature, and he came to Illinois just known as Frank, or as he liked to refer to himself as Free Frank.
Wow.
And was given a name so he could do business with other members of the state of Illinois. In the legislature at that time to vote for that was a man by the name of Abraham Lincoln.
Not familiar with him, but...
I didn't think you... like I said, you live in your own little world.
There's a picture of some guy on my license plate that I'm told.
Oh, you're just mad because it's not a picture of you on the license plate.
Oh, how frightening would that be? Think of how many more accidents there'd be on the highway.
But essentially, that's the story.
That's
though.
A fantastic story.
It is continually amazing.
Is there a way for we, the average listening-going public, to hear said story?
Not one, but two ways. First of all, it is up on the WGN Radio website, and I will be preparing within the hour a little clip for you to listen to. So we can put that together. I'll give it to producer Jack, and we will have it up and running for you. Yes.
Nice. Yeah, because Schwani doesn't deal with any of the rest of us anymore now that he's a big winner.
Now,
I was told when I stepped into the radio station this morning, there was someone at the door alerting me, don't look Schwani directly in the eye.
Yeah, I asked him if we could still call him Schwani.
Yeah, right. The whole demeanor has changed.
It's totally changed.
For some reason, he's walking around with a cape today. I don't even understand what that is about.
Fell off.
He's got an ascot and a cape and a monocle. Which I don't understand.
With a pipe.
With a pipe. Right. Right. We don't even allow smoking in the building. But he's
still walking around with a pipe.
He's still walking around like he's Sherlock Holmes for some reason this morning.
Elementary.
Well, congratulations to you.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Very deserving, because I know that you work hard on all those things.
Yeah, when I do stories like this, I have to say it is a labor of love. I just enjoy covering things like this, uncovering fascinating aspects of stories like this.
Right.
It's very, very amazing to do. And I am grateful to Ryan Burrow, who was here in our newsroom this morning, for letting me do the story and the station in general.
You don't have to kiss up to anybody.
I'm just...
You're a Peter Lissigore Award winner now.
Yeah.
Let's explain who Peter Lissigore was.
You don't have to kiss up to anybody.
Get your own parking spot now.
Ryan should be thanking you for being in the newsroom. Schwani, thank you for being here and part of our news team. Your award-winning whatever it was.
whatever
you just said.
Let's explain who Peter Lissigore was.
Yeah, he's a big deal, famous journalist.
He was a longtime veteran reporter of what was the Chicago Daily News back in the 60s and 70s.
What's the Chicago Daily News?
Yeah, right. What's the Chicago Daily News? But he was later the bureau chief in Washington, D.C. for the Daily News and was... You know, part of that great group of journalists at that time, among them Mike Royko and the editor of the Daily News, Herman Kogan, father of Rick Kogan.
Father of Rick Kogan, right.
So he was a part of that incredible group of people and, you know, a heyday, more or less, of journalism, just as the Tribune and papers nationwide.
Yeah.
So congratulations to Rick.
This is a big deal award. The Lissigore Award is, you know, a lot of awards, you know, they just hand them out like lifesavers to people. But but the Lissigore Awards is like, you got to have some chops to win a Lissigore Award. It's a big deal.
Well, it was an honor, and was up against some competition.
See, you don't have to do. You also don't have to do that. Yeah, I want to thank my competition for.
All right, I'll just be quiet.
Hey, you won. You won.
I was just trying to include everybody.
The Schwani won.
Should I have them change the plaque to just say Schwani now?
I would,
to satisfy
personally,
you?
Personally, I think.
Is that what you want?
I think it would be more relatable. And I'm pretty sure amongst all the other journalists who won Peter Lisagor Awards, then you would become the only one with a one name.
What are you? Yeah, right.
You'd be like Cher or,
like Cher, Madonna. Or Kramer.
Madonna. Yeah, right. Somebody sent me a photo of you posing with your plaque.
They did?
Yeah.
I think that was on the website, wasn't it?
Oh.
Or on Twitter. I can't remember which one it was.
I like that you took your I voted sticker off of your...
That was his fancy members only jacket,
velour,
by the way.
That you were... Yeah, your members only jacket. Got a nice big smile holding your plaque.
It was a great night.
Yeah, very nice.
Very cool. Great night.
Very cool.
Very, very nice. The 608 area code says, I picture Schwani walking around with his award dressed up like the Planter's Peanut Man.
With the cane.
Top hat and monocle.
You have pictured it correct. You know, we're going to have to stop saying award winning if we are going to actually start winning awards on this show. It was fun when we were just lying about the whole thing, but now it's become more serious. Our weekly compendium of fascinating facts and figures, ladies and gentlemen, the Peter Lisagor award winning Dave Schwan.
That's
now.
Mr. Schwan.
Wow.
It's Mr. Schwan.
I can think of one more word.
So you're going to start it over?
I've got one more word I could add in there after Mr. if you'd like.
Thank you so much, Uncle Dean and friends. Get out your compasses, protractors, and newfangled devices because we're going out west today to Rough and Ready, California. Rough and Ready, California.
Rough and Ready, California.
In Nevada County, California.
Nevada County, California.
The population, that's California. That's right. Just like Jed and Granny
that's
say.
Right.
California is the place you ought to be.
So they loaded up the truck and they moved to Beverly
Hills.
Hills, that is.
Swimming pools.
Movie stars. Well, there's only 963 people that live in Rough and Ready, California, which was started in 1849 by a mining company that came from Wisconsin. They were known as Rough and Ready because they took their name from a former president and general, Zachary Taylor, who is called Rough and Ready. Now, here's what's interesting. The Great Republic of Rough and Ready in 1850 decided they were going to secede from the Union, which is interesting because California wasn't part of the Union yet. But they rejoined on the 4th of July in 1850, have been ever since. Rough and Ready, California.
California.
California has mostly clear skies and 57 degrees.
And this just in, following this forecast, Schwani's just won three more awards for some. 9:37, a gorgeous Sunday morning. Dean Richards here with The Week in Health. Dr. Jeremy Silver joining us, Medical Director, Emergency Medicine, Northwestern's Kishwaukee Hospital. Dr. Silver, good morning, my friend. How are you?
And good morning to you, Dean.
So lots of things to talk about today. It's National Stroke Awareness Month. We talked about the Lung Association's climb that's going on as we speak at Soldier Field. COVID numbers are up and COVID deaths are up in some places. But I want to start talking about something that hit us very close to home here at WGN this week. And that was... the Instagram post by a reporter, our pal, one of the best guys that there is, Michael Lowe, revealing that he was diagnosed with stage 3 colon cancer. and will undergo radiation and chemotherapy for about 6 months prior to surgery. He is part of a clinical trial with Northwestern. Dr. Silver, Mike Lowe is 44 years old. I mean, that's remarkably young for a diagnosis like this, isn't it?
First of all, wish Mike all the best, and he's going to get the best care you can possibly get where he's going. So Godspeed to him and his family. It's young, and I think what we're seeing as a trend, and it's not 100% understood why, is that the average age of diagnosis is getting lower. And I don't have a good answer for that today. I think there's a lot of speculation, but that's definitely something that we're seeing. Typically, colon cancer is a cancer associated with increasing age, particularly over 50. Younger folks are more and more vulnerable. In fact, our family knows somebody in their 20s who was recently diagnosed with colon cancer.
Wow. I mean, it's a colonoscopy, which would be the early detection for something like this, I think. Isn't the accepted age for your first colonoscopy, what is it, 45 or 50 years old now, something like that?
Yeah, it is 45, which was lowered a few years ago, but perhaps we need to look at lowering it again. I will say that with the caveat that if your family has risk factors, or you have risk factors based on, you know, family or other factors, your doctor may recommend doing it sooner. So some people are getting screened, you know, as young as in their 30s, depending on your predisposition for it.
Yeah, my maternal grandmother died of colon cancer. So my doctor at the time recommended that I start getting colonoscopies at 40 years old, a little younger than usual, especially back then, because I think the age was higher when I first started going through this. But this just underlines the importance of these preventative measures, right? To
absolutely
learn whatever you can as early as you can, so it can be treated.
Absolutely. Screening is so important, and why it's important to have a primary care doctor who can compile all of your information and personalize your screening plan just for you so that you can stay on top of these things.
Now, you know, stage three is not as serious as stage four, of course, but just talk to us a little bit about the seriousness of the various stages for something like this.
Yeah, stage three cancer basically is cancer that spread to local lymph nodes. There's different ways of looking at cancer, but if you take the staging paradigm, stage zero is when you have abnormal cells there, but they haven't spread anywhere. Sometimes they call that in situ. And then stage one, the cancer's small and maybe it's only spread a little bit locally. Stage two and three, that describes local tissue involvement or lymph node involvement. And then stage four is when it's gone out to other parts of the body. And that's the same thing as saying metastatic cancer.
Yeah.
And it's also the same thing as saying advanced cancer. It all means the same thing.
Well, Mike's we're going to talk to Mike in the next half hour. What he has been posting, his social media posts, have been very, very motivating and positive. He says, "I'll be motivated by Walter Payton's motto, 'Never die easy.' You won't see me on the air as much for a while, but I'll be providing health updates on this page periodically," meaning his Instagram page. And, Mike, being the gifted wordsmith that he is and storyteller that he is, puts a line in here that it made me sad, but it made me laugh at the same time. He goes, "Cancer sucks, but it's growing on me."
Very funny.
So typical of Mike's sense of humor. Again, we'll talk with Mike Lowe in the next half hour and just get a little update from him. But this is something which is beatable, right? I mean, this is very definitely something which is beatable. People do all
absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And there's so many different therapies now, and especially when you're at a center of excellence, they have access to all the latest and greatest data and tools and drugs. So I think he's got a great shot at this.
He said that he's going to be participating in a clinical trial. What does that mean exactly?
Right. So all the time, drug companies and other companies involved in medicine are running what we call trials to determine if the treatment is actually effective. So drug development takes years and years. It starts out in the lab with an idea, right? You're working in a lab and you think, well, if I design a drug like this, it should attack this kind of cell and maybe it'll stop the spread of cancer. And then you have all this proof of concept and you get to a point where you want to gather a bunch of people and try the drug out on them. And so people that are suffering from cancer are absolutely motivated to participate because it could potentially impact their lives. And so you take at this point in what the trial is you take a bunch of people and you give some people the treatment and you give some people something called a placebo, which is essentially a sugar pill. It doesn't have any medicine in it. And you measure the response and see if there's any measurable response. And you look at the side effects and make sure the side effects aren't worse than the cure. And then if those trials end up bearing out positive data, then the next step is going to the FDA and saying, hey, look what I got here. This is very promising. And then the FDA either says yes or no.
Yeah. The 407 area code writes, could the Western diet, which consists of red meat and processed foods, be contributing to colon cancer?
Yes, it can. In fact, we know that diets high in red meat are a risk factor for colon cancer. And sorry to the steak eaters out there, myself included, but the suggestion is to keep processed meat, things like salami or bacon, and red meat to a minimum, and things like fish, chicken, fruits and vegetables to a maximum, and that is just good advice across the board. Unfortunately,
when I'm in the grocery store and I see chickens, and some are, they says that they're free range and there are no antibiotics used and such. Am I better to buy those kinds of products as opposed to the less expensive ones that don't say that?
I mean, I do. And I think that there's something to be said for not ingesting animals that had drugs kind of pumped into them. To me, that's just kind of a common sense type of thing. I think the less antibiotics we have in our system, the less resistance we're going to have over time. That's my advice to folks, but that's not based on any particular study. That's just my own personal opinion.
Yeah, it just seems like the more holistic the food source is, whatever the food source is, whether it's fruit or vegetable or some type of animal product, whatever, the more natural it is, probably the better it is for you. The 847 area code asks, what determines how they do radiation and chemotherapy and surgery first? In Mike's case, Mike said that they were going to do chemo and radiation and then do surgery. How do they decide, to do the surgery first and then the radiation and chemotherapy? How is that?
Yeah, I can tell you it's not just a flip of a coin. It's very thoughtful consideration. At hospitals that are cancer centers of excellence, they have things called tumor board or tumor panel. It's a group of physicians that is comprised of surgeons, medical oncologists, pathologists, nurses, and even the physical therapists. I mean, it's a whole multidisciplinary group that will sit and look at each case and say, all right, based on what we know and based on what the data says, we think we should probably shrink the tumor in this case before we go after it with the knife, because we'll have a better outcome versus, hey, this thing is so aggressive, we got to get it out of the body now. We don't have time to wait. So there's a variety of factors that may be at play And so they look at each person individually and say, okay, you're going to get this versus you'll get that, you know, based on what the evidence shows.
All right. Again, we're going to talk with Mike Lowe himself coming up in our next half hour, and we'll continue with Dr. Jeremy Silver, Director of Emergency Medicine, Northwestern's Kishwaukee Hospital, right after this. 951, Dean Richards, The Week in Health, Dr. Jeremy Silver, answering your questions on our text line and on our phone line, 312-981-7200. So May is National Stroke Awareness Month. How prevalent a problem still is stroke, Dr. Silver?
Stroke is still a major problem, one of the leading causes of disability in the U.S. and also worldwide. So there'll be hundreds of thousands of strokes here in the United States this year. And the impact it has on people and their families and on the workplace, it's just it's hard to really kind of quantify. We see people with strokes all the time in the emergency room, and that's where we have an incredible opportunity to intervene early and get them the care they need, which can absolutely impact their outcome versus having a life of disability or even being bedbound.
What are the symptoms that you might be a candidate for stroke?
Yeah, so you know what we like to say is BFAST is sort of the acronym that we use. So a lot of people, you know, when they think of stroke, they think, you know, well, maybe it's somebody that, you know, can't move their leg. BFAST is something that everybody can remember at home. It's balance, so a sudden loss of balance. E would be eyes, which is a problem with vision. F is face, so a facial droop or slurred speech. And arm is the A, which is a weakness in the arm or a funny feeling in the arm. And then I mentioned speech before, and then time, which is a reminder that you have a limited amount of time to get help. So if any of those symptoms come into play quickly, just get help. Go call 911 or come to the hospital, and we can absolutely figure out what's going on.
Yeah, is a stroke related to high blood pressure? Is that what brings it on?
Yeah, that's certainly one of the biggest risk factors for stroke. So, you know, having uncontrolled blood pressure, diabetes is a risk factor for stroke. So advanced age is a risk factor for stroke. Of course, smoking is a risk factor for stroke. And then anybody who's had a prior stroke would be at a higher risk for another one. You know, they like to say in the medical world that brain is time, meaning that for every minute that we lose, you're losing hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of brain cells. So it's critical to get seen as quickly as possible. It's almost like a heart attack. When someone comes in and they have stroke symptoms, we immediately call a stroke alert. You'll see that at probably any ER these days, rush all the resources to the patient so that we can identify it if it's there and then treat it if it's treatable.
So how can people decrease their risk for stroke? Is it dietary? Is it exercise? Is it all of those things probably?
Yeah, there are very modifiable risk factors. According to the CDC, up to 90% of strokes are actually caused by modifiable factors, so things that you can do something about. So you mentioned, Dean, high blood pressure. If you have high blood pressure and it's not well controlled, you can go see your doctor and add another medication. Likewise, reducing salt and exercising can help bring your blood pressure down as well.
Reducing salt, but increasing exercise, not reducing exercise, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Okay. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Low salt, high exercise.
Two completely different things. Although it did make me smile for just a moment.
So yeah, Dean, smoking is the last piece. It's certainly a risk factor for stroke and for other medical conditions. So that's the last piece of it, which of course is probably the hardest piece to limit if you're addicted.
Okay, real quick, before we run out of time, I was reading some numbers this week that COVID cases and COVID deaths are up in some places. Is this something that we should all be concerned about? Another good reminder to make sure you're up to date with your immunizations. Where are we with all this?
So what I went online, I go to the CDC website to look at data, and I can see that hospitalizations are up, but overall, and they may, deaths may be up in some places, but overall in the U.S., deaths are down, and emergency department visits are down, and we're kind of sitting at a 3% positivity rate state by state. But I fully agree. You know, the simplest way to prevent transmission of any of these bad germs, whether it's COVID or the flu or measles, is hand washing and masking. And if we just do those two simple things, we can certainly prevent the spread of illness.
Yeah, and I guess making sure that you're up to date with your immunizations on all of those things that you just mentioned. I was thinking about it the other day. At this point, I don't even really remember what my last immunization was for COVID. I'd have to go back and look at the, you know, the charts and all that. And where should we be now? Is there like a number of boosters we should have had?
Depending on your age and your risk factors, there is another booster that came out in the fall. And it seems to be very effective against the most recent variant, this JN.1 variant, as opposed to the last set of boosters, which had been completed in the previous fall, which was having good activity against the Omicron variant, which were long past. So if you haven't been vaccinated last fall, then there is another booster that's available, and certainly recommended if you're over 50 or have chronic medical condition.
Dr. Jeremy Silver, Medical Director, Emergency Medicine, Northwestern's Kishwaukee Hospital. Have a great Sunday, Doc. Thanks so much.
And you, Dean, take care.
So because of the Indy 500 that Andy was just talking about a minute ago, we won't have a show next week.
That's correct.
Will you guys be here?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
I have a newsroom to run. Of course I'll be here.
Okay, Dane Neal will be sitting in your spot leading up to the race.
I will be the only one then, sitting in a lawn chair, relaxing.
We'll be over after the show at 10 o'clock, sorry.
Thanks. I'll let security know to not let you in. I want to cover a bunch of stuff today that we normally would cover for next weekend. And one of the biggest stories is that Maxwell Street Market is returning to its original location.
I thought of you immediately when I saw that story happen break the other day.
Didn't we used to report on Maxwell Street?
We always
all the time?
Had fun doing it during the traffic reports. Yes,
right.
The closures on Desplaines there.
They moved over to South Desplaines Street in 2008. And now they're returning back to its original location right by UIC campus on Maxwell Street itself between Halsted and Union Avenue.
That's right. And if you go into Manny's Deli, there are amazing pictures of that Maxwell's, the original one from like 100 years ago.
Right.
Amazing pictures.
I like to look at the pictures while I'm eating the corned beef sandwich the size of my head.
Yeah, right. Let alone the potato pancake that comes with it.
Potato pancake. Ooh. Have you ever had a pastrami sandwich over there?
Many times, yes.
Some of the other fine things they have on their cafeteria line over at Manny's. That's such a good place.
Mm. Lox and bagels.
Corned beef.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I love a corned beef sandwich.
Yep.
Regular yellow mustard or brown mustard?
Yellow.
Me too. I'm old school.
Me too.
Maxwell Street, this will take place starting next weekend, by the way, and then it'll be the last Sunday of every month is when Maxwell Street Market will be open. And this is perfectly timed because I'm off next week.
So you're going to go over there and set up shop, are you?
Well, I'm not going to set up shop, but I am so low on gym socks and hubcaps. Yes. So coming up in a few minutes, WGN-TV reporter Mike Lowe joins us live. Mike, who revealed on his Instagram account this week that he has been diagnosed with stage 3 colon cancer. We'll talk to Mike, get the update, see what will happen next for one of the most talented reporters, one of the most talented storytellers, just one of the great all-time guys in our WGN newsroom, Mike Lowe, coming up in just a couple of minutes. That's the kind of news, you guys, that, I mean, that'll shake you up when...
Yeah.
He's only 44 years old.
That's wow. That's what gets you, because as you were talking to the doctor, you know, 45 is the new guideline for starting to get colonoscopies. Right. I had my first one, by the way, like last month.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's so important. So important.
Yeah.
Is this how they determined it?
I believe so. We'll find out when we talk to Mike in a few minutes. I don't usually do on this day in history kind of stuff. But there's a pretty important date that happened on this day in history, May 19th, 1962. Film star Marilyn Monroe sang "Happy Birthday to You" to President John F. Kennedy.
How about it? Wow. 62 years ago now.
Is that 62 years?
Yes.
From 1962, it's 62 years.
Yeah, here it is, 2024.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm not good with math.
I'm not either, but I took a guess.
It took place at a Democratic fundraiser at New York's Madison Square Garden. Now we know that Marilyn Monroe was, quote, pretty good friends with the Kennedy brothers, as we now know. And you're going to hear, I'm going to play the clip here in a second with Peter, remember actor Peter Lawford?
Yes, he was part of the Rat Pack.
Part of the Rat Pack.
Yeah.
You know, all these guys were involved in JFK's fundraising. Sinatra, all these guys were. But he was the one that introduced Marilyn Monroe on stage at New York's Madison Square Garden. And Marilyn Monroe was running late for the appearance. So it's more than creepy to hear Peter Lawford then just making a joke, calling her the late Marilyn Monroe.
Oh, wow.
When he introduced
her.
Because she would be found dead just a few months after this. But take a listen to this. May 19th, 1962.
Mr. President, on this occasion of your birthday, this lovely lady is not only punctilious but punctual. Mr. President, Marilyn Monroe. Perhaps there has been no one female who meant so much, who has done more. Mr. President, the late Marilyn Monroe.
She sings, thanks for the memories, thanks for all you've done, and scampers off the stage. May 19th, 1962. And it's another very interesting anniversary having to do with Jackie Kennedy Onassis. We'll get to that coming up a little bit later on. And coming up a little bit later on, one-on-one with Jim Gaffigan on the show. We'll get into our theater segment. I've got my review of the Carole King musical, Beautiful, all coming up. But earlier this morning, we were talking with Dr. Jeremy Silver on our Week in Health segment about the Instagram post that WGN-TV's Mike Lowe posted that just hit us all like a ton of bricks, that says, "Cancer sucks, but it's growing on me." Said, "I wanted to let you know that I was diagnosed with stage 3 colon cancer and that I'll be participating in a clinical trial with Northwestern Medicine. I'll be undergoing radiation and chemotherapy for 6 months prior to surgery. Stage 3 is serious. Chadwick Boseman, the actor who played the title character in Black Panther, died from stage 3 colon cancer. But Mike continues, "I'm staying 100% positive. I've got a great team of doctors, all of whom say this could be a curable cancer. I'll be motivated by Walter Payton's motto, 'Never die easy.' You won't see me on the air as much for a while, but I'll be providing health updates on this page periodically." Mike is one of the most gifted storytellers that there is. I am proud to be his friend, and he joins us live on our telephone line right now to talk about this new journey that you never really wanted to go down, right, Mike?
I mean, it's, hey, Dean, thanks for having me on, and it's always an honor to be on WGN Radio with you. Yeah, it's something that I was just talking to a friend the other day, 2 weeks ago. I wasn't even thinking about this, and now it's kind of my whole life is going to doctor's appointments and learning about colorectal cancer. So
right.
It's amazing how things can change so fast.
So how did this all start? I mean, were you presenting symptoms and that you went to get checked out? Did you just go for like a routine checkup? Tell me how this all started.
No, I actually am younger. I'm 44, and the age of that they suggest that you have the routine screening, the routine colonoscopy is 45. So I haven't even gotten to that point yet. But I was having symptoms, you know, not to get too graphic, but blood in my bowel movements. I was having constipation. And then kind of the thing that put it over the top for me that I really had to go to the doctor was I started having severe abdominal pain in my lower left abdomen. And I actually one night woke up in the middle of the night. I've never gone to the emergency room in my adult life for anything. And this felt like a stabbing severe pain, almost on the order of like appendicitis, mm-hmm. like you're being stabbed from the inside of your body.
Right.
So I went to the emergency room, and it's kind of, looking back, I've been telling people it's kind of like if you've ever had car trouble and then you get to the mechanic and then it's like, well, it was rumbling earlier. I don't know why it's not doing that anymore.
Right.
I got there and the pain had kind of subsided. So I was waiting in the emergency room for about 3 hours as, you know, they were dealing with more serious immediate cases, heart attacks. There was a kid with his forehead split open that needed stitches. And I left without being seen because I was like, you know what, maybe this was just food poisoning or, you know, maybe that's just what happens when I eat Chipotle or whatever.
Right.
So, you know, you can make up 100 excuses. And so I left without being seen. But thank God I saw my parents that weekend. And my mom insisted on me making an appointment. I was like, I think I'm fine. It was just a weird thing. She's like, make the appointment in front of me right now. And so I did. And that Friday, I went in to just see my general physician. And he had to do a digital rectal exam, uncomfortable, stick the finger.
We've all gone through that. Yeah. Or at least guys have, at least anyway, right?
Right. You know, it's the craziest thing, right, because of where this cancer is. It's just a, like, somewhat humorous or whatever. I don't want to say humorous, but it's, you know, to talk about it seems kind of silly when you're talking about that area of your body.
Right, it begs for jokes, yeah. I know, I understand.
Exactly.
Yeah.
a real pain in the butt, you know, all that
kind of
stuff.
Michael, stop it.
But so I asked him as this was going on, I'm like, so can you actually see hemorrhoids? Like, is that something you can see, like, with the naked eye? And he's like, I'm afraid this is something far more serious than that. So that was a Friday afternoon. By the next Monday, I was in to see the specialist, and I was lucky that I had one of my closest friends with me. He's like, who insisted on coming to the appointment with me after we were talking about it. And that's where I got the, you have cancer diagnosis. Yeah. And then from there it was, we got to get you in for a biopsy, a colonoscopy, CT scans, MRIs, blood tests.
Right.
It was like the whole workup. And I'm with a team of great doctors at Northwestern Medicine. And as you mentioned, or you were reading the post that I had written, I'm going to take part in a clinical trial, which I don't know if I'll actually be part of the 50% of the trial, because they have to have the control group to see if the thing works. But if I get to be part of the group that gets kind of this like extra medicine, it'll be like a stronger version of chemotherapy that might be a little tougher for the body to tolerate, but they hope can have a more curative effect, where eventually they can maybe treat cancer without the surgery. As it stands right now, I'm going to have to go through about 2 months of simultaneous chemo pills and radiation, then graduate to the intravenous chemo, which is the one that really kind of knocks you down a little bit. You know, that's where people can lose their hair and get fatigue and nausea and just kind of seem a little broken. You know, if you ever see somebody on cancer or who's on chemo in the movies or read about in books, that's kind of what you have in your imagination.
Right.
And then just in time to ruin Christmas, I'll be having surgery. sometime around Christmas.
On the other hand, you know, you may be getting the greatest Christmas present ever. By having that surgery and coming out with, you know, flying colors at the same time.
I've got the fingers crossed, and I'm not even really entertaining, the idea that this won't go my way. Like I said, I'm going to try and stay 100% positive, because the alternative is just to sit and say,
right,
this isn't fair, woe is me, and that doesn't help the situation at all.
Does not help, right, exactly right. So are you back home now? Are you in the hospital now? What is your current state?
I'm actually at my apartment right now, just north of Wrigley Field, and I will. So part of the reason why I said you won't see me on air as much, I will actually try to work through the first stages of this, but there will be days where I have to be out, just like last Friday, in preparation for radiation. They have to do this scan. They call it like a radiation simulation, where they mold something so your legs can't move, because you have to stay completely still when you're getting radiation. And so they had to kind of build that for me, come up with this AI map using infrared cameras and all kinds of stuff to determine exactly how the laser is going to move. And that takes about 7 days to do that. So I won't actually start the chemo pills and radiation therapy until after Memorial Day, because it just takes about a week for them to get the plan together.
Right.
But as I said, I'm going to try and work through most of that, because people can tolerate that pretty well from what the doctors have told me, until the very end, when the cumulative effect of radiation kind of takes its toll and you're really fatigued.
Right.
And then we'll see how it goes with IV chemo, because that has the potential to be really rough on your body, but some people tolerate that well too. The time that I really will have to be out and in the hospital is the surgery. And unfortunately, they told me this is kind of the one part I'm dreading the most, is that during the healing process after surgery, I'll most likely have to have a colostomy bag.
Right.
Right. Nobody wants to have that, but that's the idea behind that is, you know, the waste has to kind of bypass your colon and your intestines as those are healing from surgery.
Sure, during the healing process. Yeah, I've known so many people. My grandmother was one of them many, many years ago who resisted having a colostomy bag because, you know, for vanity and, you know, just for a lot of reasons. And it's just a necessary step, you know, things. And I'm so impressed with how you're going to pace yourself with this. I would urge you, not to do too much, but at the same time, I know you want to stay busy and active and probably a little distracted by working, right? A little bit while you're going through this?
I think that will be the key, is being able to focus on things other than, you know, the poisoning that's going on in my body.
Right.
If I can, like, do the things that I'm passionate about, obviously one of which is being a WGN reporter and telling the stories of Chicago and the Chicago area.
Yeah.
You know, to the extent that I can do that and still be effective while I'm undergoing this, that will, I think, help me greatly.
Yeah.
And it's just a matter of, can I physically do it, and can I still be sharp while all this is going on? And, you know, we work in a wonderful newsroom. I've worked in places around the country, and there's no place like WGN that has that family atmosphere. And our bosses have been great. They basically told me, you know, whatever you have to do, we're behind you.
Yeah.
And not everybody has that. As crazy as it sounds, I do feel lucky in that we know that so many people, especially young people, will be diagnosed with this disease. This year alone, it's something like 150,000 people, I think I read, will get this diagnosis. And not every one of them has access to world-class health care like we do in Chicago. Not every one of them has an understanding employer like I do. Not every one of them has a network of family and friends and great colleagues like you behind them. So I do feel lucky that all the factors that I have to kind of take this on, not everybody else has, and I wish those who don't have them the best, but I do. It's crazy to say when you get a cancer diagnosis that you feel lucky, but I was just thinking about that the other day, like all of these things that are in place for me to succeed and to get through this, that not everybody else is fortunate to have.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I can see, what the reaction was in the newsroom when your post came out. And, you know, it's like we all got hit in the head with a brick of hearing that truly one of the nicest people ever and one of the best reporters, best storytellers, is hit with this. It hit us all. I can see the reaction on social media of the viewers and the public and their love for you. I can see what's going on my text line right now for people sending their love and prayers and best wishes to you. So you've got a strong network of people who love you and are 1,000% behind you. I also should mention that a local T-shirt shop is honoring Mike with a T-shirt, one T-shirt that says "Low Strong" and the other that says "Cancer Sucks, hashtag Low Strong," and 100% of the proceeds for these T-shirts, 100% of the proceeds are going to go directly to Mike to help him with the financial obligations that he'll have as a result of this. So if anyone is interested in that, you can go to obviousshirts.com. Or you can go to the WGN TV website and learn more about that. Mike, it's great to hear your voice. Please, keep us posted on what's going on as you can. Please know that our love is with you and 1,000% support. We wish you all the best during all this, and I know that we'll be in touch many times.
Definitely,
as much as you can. As much as you can stand me.
No, you're one of the greats, and it means the world that you and everyone else has been reaching out, and I'm honestly a little bit overwhelmed. You mentioned the T-shirts. Like, I had nothing to do with it. That's Joe Johnson at Obvious Shirts. He I did a story on him years ago, and he did that unbeknownst to me. I'm so touched by all of this, and I'm definitely feeling the love, and I hope to give it all back to everyone, somewhere down the road. So thanks again, Dean, and I will see you soon.
We'll see you soon, and I'm all ready with bald fashion tips for you.
I've been told that's coming. So, we'll be twins.
I'm ready with any fashion advice that you need on baldness. I've got a lot of experience. Mike Lowe from WGN TV. Godspeed to you, my friend. We love you. Thank you.
Thank you.
It's 10:41. This is Dean Richards Sunday morning on WGN. Coming up, we'll talk with some of the folks behind the new production of Guys and Dolls. It's out at the Drury Lane Theater through June the 2nd. Tonight, by the way, I'll be going to the official world premiere of Death Becomes Her, the adaptation of the classic movie. I know it's been open in previews for a little while, but tonight is the very official opening for that. Before it will move on to New York. So I'll have my review of that for you tomorrow morning on Bob Surratt Show between 8 and 8:30, and also on the WGN-TV Morning News. I got to talk a little bit about Beautiful, the Carole King musical that I saw last Sunday that blew me away, how great it was. And then we were out there again this past Friday morning around town on WGN-TV, and you actually got to see some of the amazing performers, including Tiffany Topol, who plays Carole King in this production, who is just amazing. Her look, her voice, her stage presence, the emotion, it just makes this show, along with a great supporting cast. Sparse production on stage. Not a lot going on stage. But not a lot really is needed on stage as they tell the story of Carole King coming up as a teenager, as a songwriter, then becoming a performer on her own. But this show is just one song that you know after another. You will be singing along with the show because Carole King, in addition to performing her own songs like Beautiful and So Far Away and You've Got a Friend and the list goes on, wrote all kinds of songs for other performers from mostly the early 60s, late 50s, early 60s, into the 70s. She was the one, along with her then-husband, Jerry Goffin and others, wrote all of these songs. But what a great show that's out at the Paramount in Aurora. It is out there until June the 16th, so you can check that out. Let me take a quick break, and when we come back, let's talk a little Guys and Dolls next. 10:46, Dean Richards, Sunday morning, The Week in Theater. And one of the all-time classics in American theater is back in the Chicago area right now, the classic Guys and Dolls at the Drury Lane in Oak Brook Terrace, playing there through June the 2nd. Joining us to talk about it this morning, two bona fide Chicago theater legends, the great Roberta Duchek, who is the co-music director of the show. Hi, Roberta. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, Dean. It's so nice to be back.
Yeah, it's great to have you with us, along with Heidi Kettenring, who is, just has been in so many great shows around the Chicago area. In this show, playing General Cartwright, that includes the song Sit Down, You're Rockin' the Boat, a classic. Heidi, how are you, my friend? Hello.
Dean, I'm fantastic. I have to tell you before I forget, I was looking at Facebook this morning, and it told me that 11 years ago this very morning, I sang As Long As He Needs Me from Oliver on your show.
Oh, my gosh.
To promote the Drury Lane's production of Oliver.
How about that?
Yeah, music directed by Roberta Ducek.
How about that?
That's right. And here we are again. It only took us 11 years.
Here
to
we
get,
are.
Get
right.
Dean Show.
And now in a, I think you both have been on since then. I think. I can't guarantee. I tell you what, I'm like an Etch-a-Sketch that got turned upside down and shaken after COVID. You know, because we're doing phone interviews and Zooms, and I can't remember who was here and who wasn't and when it stopped. But I know that you both have been on the show many times. And I'm guessing, Heidi, that you're having a blast. This has got to be one of the most fun shows to perform, I would think.
You know what? It is. I am having the time of my life. Sit Down, You're Rockin' the Boat is one of the great numbers of all time, and this company of people and these musicians, it's so much fun. I have to tell you, Dean, creating this song in the room with Heidi Kettering was so much fun because she brings new colors to General Cartwright, and she ad-libbed and improvised and just had so much fun in the room, and all of that fun comes onto the stage every night.
Yeah, I can only imagine. And that's one of the things that I think I find sort of fascinating about a show that's been around for quite a while, that's been performed so many times. For you, Roberta, and your co-music director, Chris Sargent, and all the people behind putting the show on, finding new ways to present the show, to keep it fresh for people, you know, coming to see the show. So it's not something that they've seen before, right?
Absolutely. You know, the music stands the test of time. So, but with a song like Sit Down, You're Rocking the Boat, you do get to have a little bit more fun than what's on the page. There's lots of improvising and riffing and honestly, Heidi's take on the general, and when she finds the spirit, it's hilarious. But yeah, we had a very fun creative team. Dan Konecdis is director too. We just, we all love this music score, this story. So I just think it's reflected on the stage, our love for the piece.
Yeah, and Heidi, you've performed at the Drury Lane many times. You have performed at most of the stages around the Chicago area. What is it about this Drury Lane Oak Brook that that you really enjoy? I love, as an audience member, I love, you know, I don't feel a million miles away from the performance while I'm sitting there and trying to enjoy it.
Yeah, I have to tell you, the Drury Lane is a very special place to me. It's the first Equity Theater I ever performed in. It's where I got my Equity card. It's where I met my husband. It's the last theater the first and last theater where my mother saw me perform. So to be back there, actually, for the first time in 11 years, Oliver was the last show that I did there. This has been a very sort of, for lack of a better word, spiritual moment for me, because it's so much fun. And, as Roberta was saying, what's so great, the source material is so fantastic of this particular show. And Roberta and Chris and Dan Konecdis, they did such a great job of honoring what's there, but also making it fresh at the same time. Like, people aren't going to come and go, well, this isn't Guys and Dolls. They're going to go, this is Guys and Dolls, times 10, and the Drury Lane, has given them the opportunity to do that.
Yeah, that's one of the things that enjoy, Roberta, when I come to see a show that I've seen before, to see how, what they've done. There's only been one case where, and I don't even remember what show it was. It was some show that I've seen a million times, and they had changed it so much that everybody was scratching their heads, like, what are we looking at? So, I mean, you have to, like, walk the line of, kind of putting your own touches on it, but at the same time honoring why people have loved Guys and Dolls this long.
So true. You know, there's some pieces that you look at and you're like, should we touch this? Should we put this through a 2024 lens? And you're like, maybe we shouldn't do that piece, but Guys and Dolls,
honestly, you don't have to change a word of the dialogue. It's just so brilliant. And we do put it, you know, obviously we're different people in 2024, but what they're going through, the book is so funny. Yeah. And I think if you do change it, you might as well just do a different show.
Yeah. You know? Has it changed in any way, producing a show, putting a show together, post-COVID versus, you know, before?
Wow, that's a whole different show. Yes. Yes. We could talk about that for a long time. You know, a lot of things have changed. You know, we as artists have changed, and we look at art just a little bit differently. You know, more we think of it more universally, more inclusive, and we don't want to offend anybody. And some of the jokes, just like you talk to, you know, stand-up comedians, they're like, we can't tell the same jokes. It's kind of the same thing in theater. We just have to have, we have to be gentler the way we tell stories and just really think about it. And there's some stories that are so old that have to be sort of rewritten. You know, I look at shows like The Wiz, and in fact, you know, how they redid the whole book. It's brilliant. Even The Wiz needed a little bit of a new way to tell the story, you know.
A little massaging a little bit, yeah, right.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Heidi, I'm sorry.
No, I'm back. I just wanted to tell y'all that I'm back online.
Oh, yeah. We had a little phone call.
Oh, I see. Oh, we lost you.
Yeah, we're back. Yeah, no, you're back.
I am back.
And Roberta, talk to me a little bit about now performing in shows. I mean, I think things are moving along nicely in the theater world. Maybe, you know, financially, it's not hitting the same exact levels that they were pre-COVID. But in terms of audiences, in terms of the reception that you get, the enthusiasm, Heidi, as a performer, it seems like it's right back to where it used to be. Does it seem like that to you?
It does and it doesn't. I mean, what's interesting is, I mean, you know, for example, getting the audience back to the theater is still taking a little bit of time. So there's just a different feeling up there. There is a feeling from the people who come of we have been waiting for this, even 3 years out of coming back, of just absolute joy. But we're still trying to get people back. And, you know, I think part of that is we got used to being able to be entertained at home. You know, everybody figured out how to do it. And theaters, for example, did a wonderful job of getting things out there through, you could stream shows. You could, you know, pay money to stream a show, a live Broadway show. And so people are just used to not leaving their homes. So there's a different energy. And I really, really look forward to that continuing to shift back to, the energy of a full house now is a very rare thing.
Yeah.
When we have one, it is electrifying. I mean, it brings me to tears actually sometimes when I look out there and I see a full house, because it's really not the norm right now.
Yeah.
It's
electrifying to be in the audience, you know, when you as a collective audience are responding and reacting to what you're seeing on stage. There's nothing like it. And, you know, Guys and Dolls is really, if you haven't been to the theater in a long time, come back to a classic. Guys and Dolls is at the Drury Lane in Oak Brook Terrace until June the 2nd. Tickets are available at drurylanetheater.com or by phone, 630-530-0111. The great Heidi Kettenring and also Roberta Duchak, appreciate you joining us. Next time in studio, once every 10 years in studio. How about that?
I think that would be great.
Once every decade. Yeah, once every decade for sure. Guys, thank you so much. Really appreciate it. Have a great day. So we have the Indy 500 broadcast that'll be on during this time period next week, correct?
Yeah, the race actually starts, their coverage will start around 10 Dane Neal will be here along from 9 to 10 with a pre-race show. And then the Indy 500 will get underway.
Then we go.
Yeah, exactly. Just kind of watch your radio and tilt your head. Keep turning your head.
To the right.
Yeah.
To the right.
Exactly.
To the right. You excited about that, Shawnee?
Oh,
quiet.
I think it's fine.
You're kind of quiet.
I think it's fine, yes.
He's been shining up his Lessiger Award. That's what's going on.
Going to talk about that in a second.
Yep.
Shawnee got a big award this week.
Best dressed. It was actually last week.
Best dressed matter. And also Miss Congeniality for some reason. I don't even understand that one, but they got it.
What, best dressed?
No, the Miss Congeniality.
Oh, the Miss Congeniality, yeah. Yes. It is now Mr. Schwann to you.
He also won the Bathing Beauty Contest. bathing suit contest. And the winner of the prestigious Peter Lissagor Award, Dave Schwann, WGN Radio. You know, the thing is that we've been lying about being award-winning for so many years on this show.
And now we can't lie about it.
Now it seems funny that we actually have some awards. Actually, you know what? I also have a Peter Lissagor Award.
I would think you've won numerous things yourself.
I may have a couple of them.
Including something called an Emmy Award.
I do have several. I have three Emmy Awards, that I know.
That you know?
That I know of.
I'm glad you realize that.
That I know of.
I have a Most Improved Little Leaguer from age 15.
See? Ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to an award-winning...
This is definitely an award-winning
They do not
show.
Give Sunday morning shows to chimps around here. We are award-winning journalists. But Dave Schwann, this is the big news. This was what, last week?
A week ago Friday. It was on the 10th.
On the 10th.
Yeah. Award ceremony.
The Peter Lissagor Awards are a local, very prestigious journalism award judged by other journalists for excellence. And Dave Schwann won the award. What was the category?
Category was Best Feature Reporting on a Single Story.
Oh, very nice.
For audio. There were print versions and digital versions, but this was the audio portion of that category.
Yeah, now I got to say, as I said earlier, I wasn't even aware that there was still anything called print.
Well, I've got news for you. Yes, there is.
What? Really?
Yes.
Seriously.
Yes.
You know, they stopped printing the newspaper over the Tribune over at the Freedom Center. Yesterday was the final day that they print the newspaper over at the Freedom Center. They moved the whole operation out to Schaumburg now.
Mm-hmm.
And the Freedom Center, which is going to become a casino over there, right?
Right. That's right.
Yeah. But yesterday was the final edition that came out of there. You ever been over there, the Freedom Center?
Many years ago, yes, I was there when we were owned by the Tribune Corporation.
Right. Yeah, when I started with the company, when we were owned by the Tribune, I had to go over there and get drug tested.
Ah.
Really?
Yeah. I won't tell you if I passed or not. I got the job anyway.
Results are inconclusive.
They're still
to this day inconclusive.
They're still analyzing.
Figure it out. They said,
you know, all these years they have not been able to figure me out. So that's okay.
No, I know.
But I'm sad that that's you know, it's a legendary part of journalism history. So many people worked so hard to physically print the newspaper that would come to your doors and newsstands and so forth. And, you know, it's out in Schaumburg. It's still in the area, but it's not where it once was.
And way, 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 way back.
It used to be a Tribune
Tower.
It
was the basement of the Tribune Tower.
Basement of the tower.
Boy, I remember going down there once, and it was your imagination could just go to work, yeah. You know, with, you know, the guys at the linotype machines, yeah.
Wearing
putting
those
it all
hats.
Together, wearing
remember
the hats.
Those guys, yeah, the hats, yeah. Made out of newsprint, yeah. Yeah.
And quite often walking along that loading dock there,
smoking.
Thinking, yeah. Maybe you, but not me.
No, those guys were.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They'd be outside, you know, they just got done printing their paper and they're out there with their lucky strikes. I think we did a good job.
But think of the historic headlines that were printed on newspapers that left that loading dock.
Dewey defeats Truman.
Dewey defeats Truman. Getting into World War II. Not quite World War One, sure. But definitely World War II.
I don't know if they still have them over there at the Tribune Tower, because I haven't been to the mattress store that's there now. But they used to have copies of...
Yes, the metal plates.
The famous headlines of the Tribune.
Yeah. Right by the cafeteria.
Adorning the hallways there, yeah. Back in the old days.
Yep.
Yep.
Everything from something like the turn of the century through the fall of the Berlin Wall.
Yeah.
That were up there.
Right, right. Well, it's sort of a kind of a journalism day in history that they're no longer printing the paper at the Tribune's Freedom Center anymore, though. That's part of it. But the reason that we bring all of this up is these Peter Lisagor Awards are very prestigious journalism awards, which are given out to print. If you say it still exists, I'll believe you.
Thank you.
Andy,
back me up here.
Journalism does still, yeah.
Well, journalism does.
Print paper, I personally haven't
held
one in a long time.
I'm with you, Andy. Man. Andy, I'm with you on that.
It's just...
And it used to be, back in the old days, I couldn't even do my show without going through like five different newspapers.
Yeah, and as a sports geek growing up, I could not wait for that agate page where I could read all the leaders in Major League Baseball and all the box scores and dissect those.
Yeah, time marches on. It's okay. I mean, of course, some people still prefer to read it in print form. Yeah. But these awards are for print, they are for digital, they are for television, and they are for radio journalism. And not only Schwani winning one, but John Williams.
Right.
And his producer, Pete.
Yeah.
They also won a Peter Lisagor Award for the interview that they did regarding the Northwestern coach, right?
Yes, the Northwestern coach, but
Pat Fitzgerald.
The story was the interview on how the Northwestern paper broke that story.
Daily Northwestern.
Okay, all right, yeah. So tell your story, what you were telling us earlier, is a fascinating one, that you dug in and found some very interesting things.
Well, first of all, Steve Bertrand had interviewed a person that is directly connected to this story, a gentleman by the name of Gerald McWhorter. His great-great-grandfather was born a slave. And here is a slave in Kentucky who arranged to buy his freedom and then came to Illinois to set up a town that he called New Philadelphia. This is in western Illinois. In fact, it's almost as far west as you can get. It's 20 miles away from the Mississippi River and Hannibal, Missouri. But this was in the early 1830s that he came to western Illinois and then subsequently bought freedom for a lady who became his wife and some other relatives to come to the area. One of the facts that we uncovered was that it was an interracial town. You had African Americans and white people living there in a what is a very rural area.
And what year would this have been?
In the 1830s and 1840s.
Yeah, you didn't find too many towns that where people got along like that.
That's true. But you know, the bottom line on this was, you know, the determination to be free. To be a free person. Now, Free Frank, as he was known, Frank McWhorter, did not live to see the abolition of slavery, but his wife did, his children did, and it was a privilege to talk to his great-great-grandchildren about this. Very much involved with the story, as are the local residents who live in nearby towns there, Barry, Illinois, and Pittsfield, Illinois, whose hard work and determination resulted in this now being a national park site, and the National Park Service moving in to really develop this site.
Okay, so what are we going to hear with some of your award-winning reports?
This is an edited version of the full-length version that's on the web with pictures. You'll see pictures on the website if you go to WGNradio.com.
I like pictures.
We have pictures. Right, and that's all you looked at when you were reading the print paper, right? You're just looking at the pictures.
Look at Nancy and Sluggo.
Reading the comics.
So what about what? So can we? What, can you hear the clip?
Or yeah, do right. As I it gave it, I gave it to producer Jack, and okay. It's pretty much self-explanatory with the introduction. All right. Go ahead,
let's
Jack.
Let's listen to a little.
It's not a short trip from Kentucky to West Central Illinois and the open prairie where we happen to be standing. In 1830, that trip was not only long, it was quite challenging. But an African-American man born into slavery and who worked to buy his freedom did just that. He was known as Free Frank, later Free Frank McWhorter. And intent on freedom, he set up a town right here where we happen to be standing, some 80 miles west of Springfield, and named the town after the city of brotherly love. New Philadelphia.
I have actually seen the story change people's lives.
That's Sandra McWhorter Marsh, and the story of her great-great-grandfather, Free Frank McWhorter, has changed lives. He was born into slavery in North Carolina in 1777, a year after the start of the American Revolution. At some point, his owner took him to Kentucky, where he began to work and save money. Gerald McWhorter says his great-great-grandfather's goal wasn't only to make money, but to obtain freedom for himself and his wife, Lucy.
He was able to really become quite an entrepreneurial person, not only to hire out, but to save the money in order to, and he paid something like over $800 for Lucy and over $800 for himself. The history of the country is not just in terms of great personalities, et cetera, but it's the people themselves.
And New Philadelphia Association President Philip Bradshaw says that history teaches us a very important lesson today.
It's just to prove that we can live together. If they did it when they had a horse and buggy and they had slave chasers and all those things going on, if they could do it then, why in the heck can't we do it now?
And that's led to New Philadelphia being recognized by the National Park Service as our 424th National Park Site. And the continuation of that story will be the development of that site. Very interesting story to follow.
Could you all morally safer?
Boy, there's a name I haven't heard in a while.
That's what I'm going to start calling you.
Morally safer?
I'm going to start calling you Morally. Award-winning.
There will be some variations of that, I'm sure.
That's a really, I can't, seriously, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
As much as it goes against my natural grain.
To be nice to me.
To be nice to you.
I know.
But I am so proud of you, and so this is so deserving, because I know you put your heart and soul into these special reports that you've done. Like this, and about the park system, and some special things that you've done, they are phenomenal.
And we're working on more.
And you've done
more to come.
Done a great job.
Thank you very much, Dean.
So was it fun being at the awards ceremony?
Oh, it was great to be there. Yeah.
Did you go up on stage and make a speech?
No, I didn't. No, there are no speeches. I should mention this though, that there were four winners of the Lifetime Achievement Award, one of them being Tom Skilling.
Really?
Unfortunately, Tom couldn't make it. Not really sure why.
I think
but
he was in Hawaii, wasn't
maybe
it?
He probably was there, yes. But there were many awards in different categories that are given out. In fact, they said there were something like 80 different ones. So we'd still be there hearing acceptance speeches,
oh,
you know.
Yeah, there
so,
were a lot of... there's lots of different categories for all different kinds of journalism.
Right. So when they announce the winners, you walk up on stage, you receive the award, they take your picture, and then you move on. So
now, Andy, I don't know if you had heard this, that Schwani demanded when he won, he wanted a certain music played while he walked to the stage to get his.
She is.
Up, they gave him flowers.
Gutsy choice for the two-piece bikini. gutsy choice.
A million girls,
right?
More
that's why they gave him an extra large plaque to cover some of the regions. How many radio shows are giving you little Burt Parks this morning?
I know. Who's Burt Parks?
Uncle D, who's Burt Parks?
What's Miss America? What is that?
Sunday morning. So glad you're here with us. Thank you, thank you, thank you for all of the nice texts that we get and emails. People who enjoy our little silly show here every Sunday morning. Coming up a little later on in the show, one-on-one with Jim Gaffigan. Actually, it was three-on-one with Jim Gaffigan. He was on our WGN-TV morning news last week. Happened to be in town, and he's become such a good friend of the TV morning show after all these years. He stopped by. We had a great chat. So we'll replay that for you in just a bit. Also coming up, Chef Klaus Lotter from the Weber Grill restaurant out in Lombard. We had the best time. Oh, my gosh. I had so much fun this week filling in for Anna Belleval around town. One of the days we were at Original Rainbow Ice Cream in Orland Park.
I saw that one.
They've just introduced some new flavors, and they forced me, twisted my arm literally, to eat copious amounts of ice cream.
Did you have that Superman one that they were talking about?
I did not.
With the birthday cake ice cream in there?
I say that did not appeal to me.
Yeah, it looked interesting. I was just curious.
Oh,
yeah.
That sounds great to me.
Birthday cake in the ice cream?
Yeah.
In the ice cream.
Yes. I've had that at my favorite ice cream place in Michigan.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, people were eating it. People were eating it like, what?
Get with it.
Mr.
he wins an award and tells you to get with it.
Give him an award. All of a sudden, he's barking orders at people. You know what? Because I was at Rainbow, I wanted my original Rainbow. I did try the other flavors. They have a delicious fudge one that's very good. They had one that was like a dreamsicle. It was very, very good. And I felt like I was cheating on the original Rainbow. I didn't feel it was appropriate.
Was it just as good there as it is in the original location?
Original, sure, of course.
Excellent.
Yeah. They have a drive-through at this one.
Wow. Oh, do they?
Yeah. I don't even have to get out of my car to get ice cream. Are you kidding me? They're expanding like crazy. They're about to open one in Wicker Park. They've got franchises in different states. I mean, things are going great for Original Rainbow Ice Cream. So I was there, Thursday? Wednesday, I was at the Weber Grill restaurant in Lombard. It's not only a restaurant, but they've opened a Weber Grill cooking school, where you can go and take classes to learn new techniques on the grill, to just, you know, kind of brush up on things as we get ready for the grilling season. And Chef Klaus kind of led us through, some competitions out there, and we made some things out there. He made a beef brisket, a smoked beef brisket that was amazing. Melt in your mouth. Oh, it was so good. And pulled pork. Also amazing. I made some shrimp fajitas with vegetables and things like that. So he's going to join us coming up after 12 o'clock today, and we'll get a little early jump on the Memorial Day grilling season that's about to begin. We also have, what else do we have coming up here for you? I wanted to mention that on our TV cooking segment, this coming Wednesday, I'm going to get a little early jump on a grilling as well. Have you guys had pizza on the grill?
I have not.
No, I haven't. I've heard about it. You've talked about it, but I've never had it.
If I was a better friend to both of you, I would have brought you some grilled pizza.
You never bring anything.
No, that's true.
So why? That's
as
no
I
surprise.
Say, if I were a better friend. Yeah,
you never bring anything.
I enjoyed it, though.
All these years I've brought in food, and you don't.
When have you ever brought in food?
Many times.
Name
one. Into the newsroom.
Well, that's the newsroom.
Well, okay.
I don't know if you know, this is the primary studio where I am. This is the brain center of the WGN right here.
So. Oh, with you there, you could say you're the brains of the outfit,
once
right?
Once again, there's no need for you to be snippy now that you just won an award.
Wow.
Wow, Shawnee is
Mr. Schwann.
Crazy.
Mr. Schwann.
I'm going to be grilling pizzas this coming Wednesday is what I was leading toward. I've got some new pizzas that I'm going to be doing. It's all going to be Wednesday morning on the TV morning news.
Did you pick out ingredients?
Yeah.
Is this going to be a thin crust pizza?
It's going to be thin crust, yes.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thin crust with some... I'm going to do the most popular recipe that I've ever done on TV, the most requested recipe, which is my barbecue chicken caramelized onion pizza. That's so amazing. I'm going to do that. I'm going to do the classic margarita pizza. But I've got three or four new ones that I've never done on TV before that I think also will be great. Does that meet with your approval, Your
yes,
Majesty?
Yes.
All right. Those are just some of the number one songs from 1962. A million memories. Oh, Shelley Fabre. Remember her from the Donna Reed Show and her song Johnny Angel. It was in 1962 that something happened that had never happened before. America got a tour of the White House. The tour was put on by the First Lady of America at the time, Jacqueline Kennedy. We bring this up because it was on this day in 1994 that former First Lady Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis died in New York City. She was only 64 years old. I guess I didn't realize that she was that young. But today is the anniversary of the death of Jackie Kennedy. And it just reminded me, I remember, I mean, I was a little kid. You know, this is 1962. But it was a big event that they had set up this tour of the different rooms of the White House. And Jackie Kennedy herself was leading the tour and explaining, you know, what they were doing in the White House and how they were cataloging things that had never been cataloged and restoring things that had never been restored and bringing things back and, you know, making the White House a suitable display of the history of America. That was something important to her. Here's just a little bit of the very first televised tour of the White House given by then First Lady Jackie Kennedy.
Well, there's the China Room and the Gold Room and the library, which isn't finished yet. I think the first two are so well known that it would be better to go upstairs where the rooms there are of so much greater interest.
Since we're going to the East Room next, perhaps its history will give you some idea of the evolution of a single room. The East Room was originally intended as an audience room, something like the throne room in European palaces, used for funerals, weddings, meetings with American Indians and other dignitaries. The East Room gradually became associated in the American mind as the place for the grand events in the White House. The artists made the East Room seem larger and larger and raised the ceiling higher and higher until it resembled the Hall of Mirrors at Versailles. Here, from Leslie's chimney corner, the dignitaries of the Civil War are greeted by President Lincoln. Nobody smiles, and everybody but President Lincoln is frozen upright. The artist left a respectful amount of carpet showing. Mary Lincoln had spent a lot of money for the carpet, and her husband was angry. The center figure is Vice President Johnson. And this, the earliest photograph, is the East Room in President Johnson's time. When General Grant became President Grant, he put false elaborate timbers across the ceiling and furnished the room in a style crossing ancient Greece with what someone called Mississippi Riverboat. The predominant feature became three cut glass chandeliers. Under Presidents Arthur and McKinley, more and more potted palms were placed into the room.
Yeah, it's fascinating to watch this now.
Is the East Room,
it, you know, just conveys a time in America that was a more hopeful time. You know, the days of the so-called Camelot years of President Kennedy and Jackie Kennedy in the White House with little Caroline, their daughter, little John F. Kennedy Jr., hiding under his dad's desk. I mean, it was It was a very different America that we were living in then than the America that we are living in now, that's for sure. But if you want to see these tours, these Jackie Kennedy tours, they're on YouTube. They're very easy to find, and I could spend all day watching these. I got just really, really took a deep dive and drawn into them because I found it so interesting as Jackie Kennedy. Let me see if I can find. Oh, it was a reporter, CBS reporter Charles Collingwood, who walked alongside her taking this historic tour. And they had cameras set up all over the White House to show everything. And the $2 million restoration project that had just taken place. Really, really, really interesting. So on this anniversary, I guess you might say, of the death of Jackie Kennedy Onassis. It's 11:44. Our pal Jim Gaffigan, next on WGN. 47, this is Dean Richards, Sunday morning on WGN. Jim Gaffigan, native of northwestern Indiana, has become one of the most popular stand-up comedians in America through his television specials, through his stand-up comedy appearances, through roles in movies. He's part of the new movie that's out right now that's called Unfrosted, the Jerry Seinfeld-directed film about the creation of the Pop-Tart, which is just a silly movie. Don't, if you watch this movie and don't take it seriously, you will thoroughly, thoroughly enjoy it. Some people thought that they were seeing Oppenheimer or something, the way they took this movie so seriously. It's just a great, silly comedy that Jim is a part of. He stopped by our WGN-TV morning news, and we had a chat with our old pal about the movie and more.
Well, our good pal Jim Gaffigan is here. He's a six-time Grammy-nominated comedian, actor, writer, producer. He has a new movie, Unfrosted, and now streaming. He also just launched his own bourbon line, and he still has time to come in to see us.
That's unbelievable.
You know, and it's not just because Larry and I live together. I love this.
Yeah.
WGN Morning Show. I love WGN Morning Show. Is Bozo's bucket still here?
It's still here somewhere.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Yeah.
This place is haunted with the memories of our childhood.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Right? Yeah. And, you know, it's just good to be back here.
So what's going on with you? I know you're still doing stand-up. You were just here not long ago with the director of this Unfrosted film, Jerry Seinfeld.
Yes.
But also acting. I know that you sort of want to go down that path a little bit.
I love acting. Anything to get me out of the house, really.
Yeah.
No, but I love stand-up. I love acting. But it's, you know, it's the opportunity presented in front of you. And you know, playing a dumb guy from the Midwest is kind of what I do in this movie.
You've kind of been typecast, though.
I've been typecast. But it is fun,
yeah.
Right? And, like, this cast has it's an amazing cast.
Right?
So it's just every day I would look at the call sheet and I'd be like, who do I get to play with today? It was
That's so awesome.
The movie, I mean, it's Jim, it's Melissa McCarthy, it's Jerry Seinfeld, who also directs it, Amy Schumer, Bill Burr, the list goes on and on and on. My favorite, though, is Hugh Grant as Tony the Tiger.
Yeah,
plays a costumed character as Tony the Tiger.
Yeah,
hilarious.
He's great. No, it's bizarre. There's so much nostalgia. By the way, this movie is... It's not like Oppenheimer. It is not, like, if people are like, oh, an interesting analysis. No, it's just silliness.
Yeah. Yet some people reviewed it that way.
Oh, yeah.
Which is I watched this movie. It's like, this is the funniest, silliest movie.
Oh, it's
And
bizarre.
Some people took it way too seriously.
Yeah, I mean, even, you know, most comedies are kind of really romantic comedies. Like, this is just a comedy.
Yeah.
It's just silly. And it is for, like, it was really interesting because there's kids of, you know, like a 12-year-old takes something different from the movie. You know, like, I remember some of this stuff. Some of this stuff is even from, like, older times. You know, it's more Jerry's childhood. But, like, it's bizarre because there's so many little Easter eggs in there. So I've seen it a couple times, obviously, and you pick up on different things.
Right.
But of course, you know, Hugh Grant is just like, and there's
so
like
funny.
Dozens of those like weird cameos. You're like, is that who I think? I think that is that guy. I think
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Oh, nice. So, how many kids do you have now?
I have no idea. I have 5 children, and they're teenagers now. Yeah. It's really hard.
Are you still in that small apartment in New York?
I went to a smaller one. No, we have some space, but you know, like with teenagers, there's never enough space, yeah. right? The best is when empty nesters talk about the teenage years, because they always sound like they're describing a hurricane. They're like, oh, my wife and I thought we were prepared. We lost everything. But it's hard. And that's why I started my own bourbon, because, you know, alcohol is yeah. not the answer, but it's pretty close.
It helps.
It's yeah. pretty close,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Daddy needs his juice.
Yeah. Now, it's interesting how people, like, sometimes they just discover bourbon. Like, one day, like, 10 years ago, I would never have gone near bourbon. Suddenly, somehow you find it.
Yeah, it is bizarre. I mean, I think some of it is having teenagers, yeah. right? You're like, yeah. we're not going to get out of this, you know, right. Soon. And some of it is, you know, like, even the idea of drinking a beer now, it just, I mean, granted, it's 9 in the morning, yeah. but, like, it just feels too filling, you know? Yeah. And,
but you look all fit and trim.
Oh,
are you
well,
drinking
thank
bourbon
you, thank
all day?
You. What is this is what drinking Father Time bourbon, this is, you'll lose this weight. Well, thank you very much.
It's yeah. the new Ozempic.
It is. Yeah.
Jim, I got my hands on some old pictures
yes.
from your high school days.
Yeah. Oh,
somebody who's actually in studio now
really?
Went to the same boarding school as you.
Oh. Yeah.
He's in on a tour.
Where is this? What am I doing?
And provided this.
Oh, is that
provided me
Jim
with
Prex's
this.
Heaving Shots.
You heaving shots?
Yes. Wow.
It was in where? La Porte? Was that where it is?
Yeah, La Porte.
La Porte, Indiana?
That was
and
wrestling.
And you were a wrestler.
I was a wrestler.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, that is just so bizarre. Like, I bring up to my kids that I was on the wrestling team, and they don't have them at my kids' school. And they're just like, they just think it's the most bizarre thing.
Yeah.
Like, you would wrestle another kid?
Right. Did in you that, jump off the
in
top
that
rope?
Outfit?
Oh, my gosh, look at that picture.
Oh,
I got it. Where did we get that? I got
to
get that picture.
Went to, right over there, John Burke went to your, he was on the wrestling team with you, apparently.
No way. Really?
Oh, my God.
Different way. That's unbelievable. I got to get some. This guy's stalking me. You guys are like, I've never met this guy before. And he's like, yeah, I have all these photos of Jim. And he has all these like strings
yeah,
connecting
I didn't even
them.
Know
and the yarn.
Yeah.
He's
like, Jim also likes, he likes cupcakes too. He knows a lot about me.
He's like Steve Buscemi.
He has an old pair of my underwear. You guys are like not suspicious at all.
Wow.
Here's his old toothbrush too.
What made you join the wrestling team?
I wasn't good at basketball. I wasn't. I think in middle school I didn't make the basketball team, so I joined the wrestling team, and I was really bad at it. But I was so pale that we would have weigh-ins. By the way, the weigh-ins completely naked, so weird, so weird. But I would show up, and I was so pale that it would freak the other kid out. They'd be like, "What kind of?" Did we get this guy from underwater? Where did we get this guy from? I was so pale. I would really intimidate people.
What kind of kid? Were you a comedian in high school? Were you
I was kind of... I was one of those guys that had to work really hard to get a B+. Like, I was never one of those people that's like, I don't even do my homework. I didn't study. I was like, I studied really hard and I'd get like a B-. So, and I, you know, kind of an athlete, but I could, you know, never see the ball.
But
I think they got one more they wanted to show.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
One
more
they
wanted to show.
What?
Another one. That. That's
Jimbo
you.
Exhausts himself imitating the blue-white director, Mr. Danick, on Halloween Day.
Oh, my gosh. I can't even see that.
Look at that.
Yeah. No, that's crazy. So this is from a yearbook.
Yeah.
Isn't it bad before they invented color?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I gotta get that one of those color pictures. That's amazing now.
And
right?
He's obviously following you around when you're
right?
sleeping, when you're
and
eating.
And he's like, and here's your old McDonald's wrapper. You know what I mean?
God,
it's so weird looking at old pictures, right?
Do you have people, family still in Indiana a lot?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Okay.
All over Chicagoland. See, there's a wrestling team, right?
Yeah. Nice.
So weird, right?
Good Lord,
it's just so
buff.
Weird. I was very buff. I mean, that's all I would do. Yeah. It's just lift weights. I mean, that was before the internet.
Yeah.
Right?
Just lift weights and intimidate people with your pale
with the
skin.
Paleness. The only time it has an advantage being pale. Well, that and living with Larry.
What do you think of, like, the status? You were just in the Netflix festival, right?
Yeah.
He did a show. I don't know if you guys know. It was him, Jerry, right?
Yeah.
Sebastian and Nate Bargatze, who were, like, four guys doing arenas, all doing the same tour. I mean, does that blow your mind that, you know, four guys like that are sharing a stage? I mean, I couldn't have imagined comics of that nature and that stature doing that 20, 30 years ago.
Yeah, no. Well, I mean, comedy has changed so much. Yeah. I mean, Sebastian probably does like five United Centers when it comes here. So that was a very special show. But comedy has changed so dramatically. I mean, it's, and I know that everyone's like, oh, the people in the entertainment industry are narcissists that are grossly overpaid. But believe me, it's amazing. It is like really a sweet gig. I love that.
That's just one of the events at this Netflix comedy
thing. Yeah, it was crazy.
It's going on for a whole week, and it's like multiple superstars every night.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Did you bring bourbon for us to try?
I did.
Or are we just going to talk about it?
No, I brought it.
All right.
And, and special quote glasses that are very special.
Ooh. Nice.
We're going to do that coming up next.
Oh, the last 20 minutes of the show could be really interesting.
It'll be a little loopy.
Unfrosted is on Netflix. And, of course, Jim Gaffigan's Barely Alive tour continues across the country into the summer and fall. Make him a multimillionaire.
Right? My kids are taking all my money.
Yeah.
Well, there are consequences to your decision, right?
There you go. Jim Gaffigan visiting with us with Larry and Robin and Pat on our WGN-TV Morning News. We're going to do a little grilling on our Food Time segment. Segment coming up in just a few minutes. Thank you very much. Can you say you're welcome?
I was waiting for you to. You
I said thanks.
Well, you didn't drop your voice. It didn't sound like the end of a sentence.
I was just saying thank you to you.
Well, you're quite welcome. Thank you, Mr. Richards.
Oh, no. Thank you, Mr. Short.
No. Thank you, Mr. Richards.
You got your waiters, Andy? You got them, Andy?
Yeah, exactly. I need them.
Getting deep in here.
Getting very thick, yeah.
Good afternoon, Mr. Mazur.
Good afternoon, David Schwann.
Good afternoon, Mr. Heinrich.
Calling Dr. Fine.
Dr.
This is a big show today because Schwanny won a big journalism award last week. So now he demands that we not look him directly in the eye.
Mr. Schwann.
And running around here behind the scenes where my red M&Ms.
We are all, from now on, we're wearing suits and ties to work.
Yeah. Let me know how that works out.
He has been demanding that the news desk that he works at be named in honor of him. And every time the news sounder goes, they have to say, from the Dave Schwann News Center.
Nope. Who knew? Who knew?
Yeah, exactly. Who knew?
You give the guy a bowling trophy that they scratch the other name off and put his on, and all of a sudden he's Mr. Big Shot.
Scratch the name off.
It's what happened.
A bowling trophy with the big handles on the side.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And the guy bowling on top of it.
With perfect form, of course. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, wait till next week when he comes with that plaque that they gave him wrapped around his neck on a chain.
Well, you wear your WGN Walk of Fame star around your neck.
At least
at home you do.
I admire Flava Flav. I didn't know that you were that big of a fan, apparently. So
Schwana Schwan.
Schwana Schwan. A lot of people on the text line saying congratulations.
Well, thanks to everyone here. We have the best listeners in the world. There's no doubt about it.
Yep. We're very proud of you and your accomplishments.
Good work, Schwanny.
Thank you, thank you.
It makes it a lot easier for Andy and me to do absolutely nothing on the show.
Food's in town.
Yes, indeed. Get ready for Food Time, Chicago Radio's only cooking and dining show.
And somebody's on the
We're going to be talking with Chef Klaus Lauter from the Weber... I'm sorry, Cartman makes me laugh all the time. From the Weber Grill restaurant out in Lombard, to be exact. So we're going to talk some grilling here in a couple of minutes. And I've got some other recipes here. Andy, this would definitely not be in your wheelhouse.
All right, let's see what you got.
Spicy popcorn cicadas.
Let's see. I like the spicy. Popcorn's good. Cicada, no.
Chocolate-covered cicadas.
Did we try these at Treat Time one time?
Not cicadas. We ate some other bugs, I think.
And when I say we, I mean the the proverbial we.
Yeah, you didn't.
Yes. But.
What, we have grasshoppers or something like that?
I think we had grasshoppers.
Yeah.
Chocolate-covered grasshoppers. They were delicious, weren't they?
No, my stomach is still...
oh, get out of here.
That was like 3 years ago.
No, it's still...
How about cicada pizza?
Mm-hmm. Well, you're making pizza on TV, the grilled pizza this week.
I'm trying to. I am trying to decide how grossed out everyone would be if I if I actually made some cicada some cicada dishes. Mm. Have you actually seen any cicadas or heard them yet?
I have not heard of one. I know my dog has got the nose into the ground quite a bit on our walks lately, so I think he's sensing something happening soon. Yeah.
I know there are places where they're all over the place already.
Yeah.
And I've seen trees covered in mesh. That's weird, isn't mm-hmm. it? When you see the trees covered in mesh.
Got to save your tree.
I guess so. Well, for those of you interested, you take 12 freshly emerged cicadas. Mix it with Worcestershire sauce, flour, onion powder, garlic powder, paprika, salt and pepper, an egg, and then, you get it all, you mix that into a, like a batter, sort of. And then you deep fry them. Mmm.
Oh, man. Deep frying is usually good. In this case, yeah, I'm not so sure.
Yeah, I don't know.
For the chocolate-covered cicadas, you start with 8 squares of good-quality semi-sweet chocolate, 30 roasted cicadas, roast your cicadas for 15 minutes at 225 degrees. In the meantime, melt your chocolate over a double boiler and over a low heat, and then dip the roasted cicadas into the chocolate. Place them on wax paper and refrigerate until hardened, and then enjoy. Oh, man. I just don't want their little eyeballs looking at me.
Oh, man.
Right?
Those things are ugly looking.
They are ugly looking. Sorry, cicada lovers.
Yeah, it's okay. I mean, everybody's got their thing, right?
Let's see here. Take a pizza crust, put a nice pizza sauce on it, like a tomato sauce. You know what I put when I am going to do grilled pizzas this week? I put pasta sauce. I get like a 4-cheese pasta sauce in the spaghetti aisle. Mm. I spread that on lightly and then put whatever toppings I'm going to put on top of it. So I'll take my crust, I'll put the sauce, and then you put 8 cicadas throughout the pizza, 6 marinated artichoke hearts, 8 sun-dried tomatoes, and a teaspoon of red pepper flakes, and then top it with some grated mozzarella cheese. Bake it in the oven, and bon appetit.
Oh, man. I'm not sure what's worse than that one, isn't it?
No takers?
The artichoke, or is it the cicada? I'm not really sure which one it ranks.
I was going to say. As I was reading that, it's like, which does Andy hate most? Artichoke, sun-dried tomatoes, or...
Pretty close race.
He'll just take the cicadas.
Yeah, it's a pretty close race.
God, that's annoying.
Oh, my goodness.
Just wait.
How long are they going to be around?
All summer.
No way.
Yeah.
Oh, yep. Come on. They must
all summer.
They must have some appointment somewhere. Must have someplace else.
And they're headed for your yard.
Well, help yourself.
He's going to come in someday, Andy. Yeah. And just going to be beside himself. Mad. That's an understatement.
Anti-cicada.
Completely anti-cicada.
I have nothing that they can ruin.
Yeah, me neither, yeah.
They're going to be here all summer, really?
I think so, especially when we get, you know, we're already seeing warmer weather, but, you know, once 80s on a regular basis.
Don't they come out at night?
They're out day and night.
Don't they emerge? Oh. But I mean, don't they emerge from the ground at night?
Yeah, they do, but they'll be around, you know, day and night. And I remember the last time they were out, I was on Dundee Road, driving by that forest preserve there. I had the windows up, the air conditioning on, the radio on, and I still heard the cicadas coming through in the car.
I remember vividly driving during the last cicada attack.
Cicada-geddon.
Driving on like a side street, hearing nothing but crunching under my car.
Oh, really? Yeah. People just driving under the cicadas?
Well, the cicadas were everywhere. There's no place to go.
That's right.
They were all over the street, so you had no choice but to take a few out with you.
Man. That's appetizing.
Picking them out of your tire treads later on. Enjoy your lunch, everyone.
Well, now they're ready to for the dinner table.
Yeah, now they're ready for a pizza or like nice
after they're crunched under your tires.
Yeah.
Now, what makes it worse is they refer to them as a brood, right? A brood of cicadas, right?
Right.
That's just like, what? It's a bad word.
Yeah, when you see the news coverage and the films of like millions of them coming out at the same time, don't you feel like you're watching Creature Features or something?
It's just nasty.
You see their big giant eyeballs and their antennas.
As Kramer once said, Mother Nature, she's a mad scientist.
Life according to Cosmo Kramer. 12:24, and it is time to eat. Food Time, Chicago Radio's only cooking and dining show. The award-winning All Things Edible program. But every Sunday at this time is on the air. We have the best time cooking out at the Weber Grill restaurant in Lombard this past Wednesday. I was filling in for Anna Belleval around town. And we went out to Lombard to the Weber Grill restaurant where they also have a cooking school. And we had some fun with a cooking competition. We did a little bit of cooking, kind of getting you ready for the Memorial Day cooking outside weekend that's about to kick off. Chef Klaus Lauder, who is the executive chef instructor at Weber Grill Restaurant Cooking School, kind of walked us through everything. And Chef Klaus, how are you doing this morning?
I'm doing great, Gene. How are you doing, Chef?
Doing very well. Hey, I don't suppose you have any cicada recipes. We were just talking about that a minute ago.
It's so funny. Actually, you were talking about that. I was looking up at some recipes online for cicadas, you know, and they say the best thing is like either roast it nice and dry, so why not do that on the grill, right?
I guess it makes sense. And on your new Weber griddle, that would be sort of perfect, wouldn't it?
Sure could. If you guys are really definitely adventurous to try something, yeah.
Yeah, I'm trying.
It's not a typical appetizer here, but you know what? Mom says try everything once, right?
I guess. Well, I guess so. I may have to question Mom on this one. I'm not sure. there's so many other fine things to eat and enjoy. You know, why?
Absolutely.
Why bother our cicadas? Hey, I hope you guys had as much fun as we did with our around town visit this past Wednesday.
Oh, we had a blast.
Yeah, it was so fun. Cooking with everybody that was out there and trying different foods and seeing new techniques. And, you know, also the other thing is experiencing some of the latest and greatest, some of the new toys that Weber has. And griddling is that is the new thing to do outside now. Get yourself a griddle. Tell us about that Weber griddle. Is it called the Slate?
Yeah, correct. It's called a Slate. That's the newest one that just came out there. Weber did release some griddles last year, but this one is actually one of the industry's first rust-free griddles that's going to be ready, seasoned, out of the box, ready to go.
and it's nice and even cooking. It has great digital readout with it. It's really a fantastic option for your griddling needs out there. Now, there's always other inserts you can get as well, too, Drew Weber, that can actually modify your existing Genesis or Spirit grill. And they actually have them that fit right inside of it for grills that are like 2016 or newer.
How do you suppose?
Real excited to get here at the cooking school.
Yeah, how do you suppose that this became such a big deal? I mean, really, it's like in the last year or two, maybe, that griddling has become such a big deal of, you know, for outdoor cooking. You know, in the beginning of this, I was being Mr. Grumpy Pants, saying, well, if I want to do something on a griddle, I'll just get my pan out and I'll do it inside the house.
Who wants to clean up inside the house, though, Dave? You know what I mean? There's always a mess around your stovetop, your backsplash, your cabinets. I prefer cooking outdoors as much as possible just to relative ease of cleaning. And, you know, when you think about the griddleization, what you're doing is you're getting a nice caramelization on your foods, and you get much more even, like, coast-to-coast type of caramelization. I think that's where the griddling is awesome. Whether it's going to be seafood, meats, breakfast foods, quesadillas, I mean, there's so many different things you can do on that griddle.
Yeah, I guess this all came in sort of when the smash burger was became the way to do burgers, where you just smash it out, and griddling is the perfect technique for doing one of these nice, thin smash burgers, right?
It is, because if you are familiar with confit, that's like cooking protein in its own fat. That's pretty much what you're doing a smash burger with. It's going to be a little bit of grease up on there, otherwise using the fat that's coming out of the ground beef itself, and that's what's really making it nice and crispy. And typically, they're not meant to be, like, for smash burgers to be medium rare medium. You're pretty much cooking them through. But they're still juicy and tender because it's just like the greasy diner-style burger that sometimes is just really phenomenal, you know. But, you know, besides the griddle, it's like you don't want to, you know, skip that one. You go right to the traditional grill itself. There's nothing better than a grilling a burger on an awesome gas or charcoal grill, too.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. It's so delicious, and I think it's that caramelization that you get when you do that.
Yeah.
That's what really sets it apart, in my opinion. Okay, so we're going to take a break. I want to get a couple of burger ideas, things that people can do for the Memorial Day weekend from you. I want to get a seafood recommendation from you, something we can do on the grill. You made an incredible, incredible beef brisket and pulled pork in the smoker, this new smoker that Weber has. We'll tell you about that in a minute as well. So we'll get into all that. Plus, I want to get as many questions in as possible from our listeners. Grilling questions, 312-981-7200, coming up next. No better fun in the summertime than enjoying some great food behind the grill. Chef Klaus Lauder, Weber Grill Restaurants and Cooking Schools, out in Lombard on the line to answer your questions. And Chef Klaus, not a surprise, people lining up to answer questions. The 708 area code saying, every time I try to do seafood on the grill, it winds up falling apart or falling into the grill. What am I doing wrong? Can you help me?
All right. Well, I'll tackle that one a couple different points. There's going to be a couple different types of fishes out there that's going to be your nice, meaty fish out there, very slim to the texture of meat in general. And others that are going to be really flaky when they cook, like cod. Cod's going to fall apart. It's going to be flaky when it gets cooked. And perch and a couple others like that as well, too. They're going to be difficult to handle on the grill grates. What I recommend for those type of sensitive fish like that is to use either one of our grilling pans, which actually allows you to go a little more surface area, have a little grease, a little bit of oil, get that preheated like a saute pan. You can just cook right on there using a spatula to flip it and turn it rather than directly on the grates. You still have holes there to let the fish get plain kissed. Now, the other option for using grilling on with fish that are sensitive, using like cedar planks. Take some cedar planks, we actually do here in the restaurant, do a fantastic bourbon glazed cedar plank salmon. Soak your cedar planks overnight with some weights to really absorb that water. And put whatever product you want, whatever fish on top of that. apply it to the grill, like over direct heat, that's their hot zone, for about 2-3 minutes just to get the process going, and then move it to the indirect zone, even up on the rack above, and let it just, with a grill lid closed, let it just circulate and really let it absorb the flavor that's coming, steaming out of that cedar plank, too. Now, the other fish that's going to be really firm to work with is going to be like swordfish, mahi-mahi, halibut, sea bass. These are all great ones. They're awesome for grilling themselves. Where you can almost go about the same procedure, nice boiling, seasoning that fish steak, and going to broth for about a minute and a half per side over direct heat, get the nice char marks on it, and then finish again on the indirect zone. That's your cool zone. That's a great way to work with it.
Yeah. In general, how long should you be cooking some of these more hardy fish, the salmon, the mahi, the swordfish? It really doesn't take very long, does it?
No. You're looking at roughly about 6 to 8 minutes, really, just to get a nice doneness on your fish. Temperature-wise for seafood, well done is about 135. Now, if I cook a swordfish, like, well above that, it's going to be dry. There's not a lot of fat that's involved with it. Salmon, a little more fat with it. I usually like to pull it off internal temperature roughly about 125 degrees to 130 maximum. And that we allow it to still be nice and juicy.
Yeah, instant read thermometer is your best friend out there, right? While you're doing anything on the grill? Because then you know exactly where you are.
It definitely helps out. I mean, the more experience you have, you know, the more you're getting, the more have your instinctual skills in action. But rally for it, I think a thermometer is a great way to go.
Yeah, thermometer or these new, I forget what they're called, but these probes that you put into whatever it is that you're cooking, and it can actually show you on your phone the internal temperature of whatever it is that you're cooking. You don't even have to open the lid.
Right. The Weber Connect Hub is a great option. You have actually the ability to go 4 different probes in there, Bluetooth and Wi-Fi, to be able to monitor from anywhere nearby. And, it helps prevent, overcooking. And it's great for, like, large chunks of meat, whole chickens, definitely for smoking, especially when you're doing the long cooks.
312 area code is asking, how do I keep my food from sticking? I've seen so many different techniques, and, you know, different chefs have different techniques, from oiling the foods to oiling the grates. What is the surefire don't get your food stuck to the grill technique?
Well, here at the restaurant, what we like to do is we say oil your steaks and not your grates. The reason why, it's going to be three main benefits. One is that oil acts as a nice adhesive for your seasoning, like a glue. Secondly, it adds to the caramelization, conducts the heat, and the third benefit is to prevent it from sticking. If you start oiling your grates when it's hot like that, use like a combustible vegetable spray and get the fireball effect. That can dissipate before you even get to use it. Secondly, if you're going to be dousing, like a paper towel with it, kind of going across the hot grates and you're battling the flames, the chance you're going to burn yourself.
Yeah.
Hot grates are crucial. We know there's a convenience factor when you use them like a gas grill, but you also want to make sure it heats appropriately, because if that grate isn't hot enough, no matter what you do, you put that food on there, it's not hot enough, it's going to cook into the meat itself, and then it's going to stick. Another great tip, Dean, is that when you're grilling something like that and it says flip it in 2 minutes, time is only a guideline. If it's sticking a little bit, close the lid, let it go for another minute, let it finish off searing like that, and then try again.
Normally, that's what I do. I rarely do the paper towels with the oil on the grill. Because I feel like it just burns up, you know, in a minute. And why am I doing that?
Mm-hmm.
That if I've got the food oiled properly, I should be good with that. And also I use these. You have these grill pans and grill things that you guys do. I found I think Jewel sells these. It's aluminum versions of these that you put right on the grill, and then there's no cleanup afterwards. You just throw them away. They cost like $1 or something like that. And it's like, it's so worth it to not have to be scrubbing up all these, grill pans. So there's an idea.
Yeah, but the grill pans itself are very durable. You can still take stainless steel wool to them. They're dishwasher safe. And as far as cleaning your grates, I mean, let's face it, what do? We close the lid and turn it, you know, turn it up on high heat, close the lid for 15 minutes, turns everything to ash. Give it a good scrape, you're good to go.
Yeah, very true. Very true. Have you heard of the Grill Daddy brush to clean the grill? Have you heard of that Grill Daddy?
Yeah, there's Grill Daddy. There's like the Grill Rescue as well, too, that kind of supports the first responders, fire departments as well, too. That's kind of like a... almost like a scrub brush that has a little, or like a sponge, where there's a little steam to help clean as well too.
Yeah, the grill daddy is the one that I use. It contains water. The brush itself is hollow. You fill it up with water, and then when you're scraping the grill down, the water comes out, and it's like steam cleaning your grill. It's the greatest thing ever. I love it so much.
Let's go. Yeah, when it's something that you find something that works for you, then you just go ahead and go with it.
Yeah,
you know, there's
absolutely,
you know, a lot of different options out there. You know.
All right, real quick before a break, how about since we're talking seafood here, give me a nice seafood recipe that we can do on the grill for Memorial Day weekend.
All right. Well, there's quite a few options out there. I mean, I always love lobster on the grill. I think that's a fantastic option.
Mr. Fancy, look
now,
at
there's
you.
There's a couple. Yeah, well, you know, it's like you don't have to make it complicated. You know, you grab yourself some nice lobster tails, right? You go ahead and do some, use your kitchen shears and just cut right down the top of it, right down the middle. Take a knife, cut that lobster in half. Put some skewers in it so that when it starts to grill, it's not going to curl up on you.
Right.
And when you're doing this, again, do like a light brush of oil on there. Add your favorite seasoning, whether it's going to be some fresh garlic and herbs, a little bay possibly. Have some lemon juice nearby. Definitely some melted butter, because you can have lobster without butter.
Yep.
Start off right away, get some, put the meat side down up on the grill on direct heat for about a minute or two, get some char marks on it, flip it over on that shell side, pop it on indirect, and just baste it with some nice, beige, just like melted butter. Fantastic, and it's sweet and simple. You can't really mess up. Just don't overcook it.
Yeah, we did, when I was with you on Wednesday, at the cooking school, we did some shrimp fajitas. We did them on the griddle, which the shrimp were done in like 3 minutes or something like that. I got them done so fast.
Yeah,
we sautéed some a bunch of vegetables, and we had all the fixings for fajitas. It was great.
Yeah, so for the listeners out there, that's Chef Dean who actually came up with that one. You know, he said, you know what, let's do some shrimp fajitas. I'm like, you got it. You know, so the recipe put together was kind of conjunction. This is definitely a fantastic option to work with. Shrimp is one of those easiest, easy seafood to grill. You just, again, you want to avoid it to the point that it's not going to be overcooked. You don't want to have it like a rubber ball. You can bounce it off
right.
The walls.
Yeah.
You're just waiting for like the flesh to turn nice and white, and it's going to be, you know, firm but plump. And, yeah, it's a delicious option.
Yeah, it really was. I love doing scallops on the grill also.
I get the big ones.
Same thing. I always get the big ones, absolutely.
Yep.
And maybe once a week I might be a salmon on the grill kind of guy. The way that I do it most often, I put a salt and pepper, a layer of honey mustard, a good quality honey mustard, put it on the grill, skin side down. When the when the temperature is correct, I slide my spatula between the skin, which is now stuck to the grill, and the flesh, and it comes right off. It's perfectly cooked every time. It's got a slight honey mustard taste. It's so delicious. I try to get some nice fresh dill and chop up some dill and put that on top of it. That's a fantastic seafood on the grill recipe as well.
Absolutely. We actually have a variety of these surf and turf and seafood-related recipes that are at our classes. If you come check them out, we have a recompete, land and sea, prairie and ocean, some great variety of seafood classes, combination meat. If you want to check it out at WeberColdRestaurant.com, cooking classes, all great options out there for you guys to come. If you got some new tips and tricks, great date night, friends to hang out, and if it's just something you want to do. So, yeah, I want to cook, but I don't want to prep it. I don't want to clean. Go see Chef Klaus. he sets it all nicely for me. He's not his own mess after this, right?
He really does everything but put it in your mouth, chew it, and swallow it for you, right? I want to talk about the cooking school. I want to talk about that incredible pulled pork that you made and the brisket on the new pellet smoker that you have. 312-981-7200 if you've got questions. Gorgeous outside today. I hope you can enjoy it. Maybe do some grilling today, but we've got Memorial Day weekend next weekend. And I want you to get out on those grills. Enjoy yourself. Kick off summertime. Chef Klaus Lauter is with us, the executive chef instructor, Weber Grill Restaurants and Cooking School out in Lombard. So what was this amazing smoker, chef, that you did the beef brisket and the pulled pork on that was melt-in-your-mouth delicious?
Yeah, I've been so excited with when Weber started getting into the wood pellet game because I'm a big fan of it. And this new one, this next generation, is phenomenal. It's called the Searwood. You can smoke, sear, roast, rotisserie, and more on this. It's got a wide range of temperatures. It ranges from low and slow at 180, all the way up to searing temperatures of 600 degrees, and it maintains that temperature. What I mean, you can do like anything on this. I should show you a video. I just pulled off an olive oil cake that I made inside of a spring form. I bake on that grill. It's fantastic.
Is it is it propane charged? Is it how does the cooking process work with these pellet?
All you need is a working electrical outlet. You just hook that up there. You load it up the side hopper with the wood pellets. Everything from cherry to apples to mesquite, hickory, or our Grill Master blend. Set it up. It's got that Weber Connect digital software that's in there. Again, you can monitor this on your phone. So it kind of takes some of the guesswork out of it. You put all your probes in there as well, too. You don't have to camp outside on your, you know, by your couch or something like that near the your smoker outside. It's an alarm.
I'll tell you what.
You know, check it out from there.
I did some slabs of ribs on one of these, not this new one that you're talking about, whatever the previous generation was. And I smoked them low and slow, and these grills are so smart now. It connected to my phone, and it told me what the internal temperature was, when I needed to go out there and baste, when I needed to. I didn't have to stand out in the hot weather. I was literally laying on the couch enjoying a cool drink while this pellet grill was doing all the work.
Yeah. Get a great smoky flavor out of it. And like I said, so you can go twofold. If you want to go start smoking a whole pork loin, for example, let it go for about 45 minutes, pull it off, crank up the temperature, cut your pork chops out of it, and then finish it off with your hard sear pork chops. You know, it's you got a beauty like all in one with that.
Yeah, it's a great device.
Now, this particular one's got, it's great.
So you did a beef brisket. You did a pulled pork. I assume like a pork shoulder. Is that what you did for the pulled pork?
Yeah, it was a bone-in pork shoulder, and really nothing to it when it comes to purchasing it at the store. You usually have them in whole because you can't really separate them. You just grab it, and once you pull it out of the packaging, get a little wipe down, and then just apply your rub. Some might use like a yellow mustard, some might a little bit of oil, and then spice it up to your heart's content. You know, traditionally, you're doing just a nice, rich barbecue spice, you know, nicely packed all around it. You set your smoker between anywhere from 225 to like 325, depends on your preference on it. Pop it right on there for your in the center rack there for, you know, the thermometer inside of it. Let it go for anywhere from 12 to 14 hours. Internal temperature wise, what you're looking at when it's finished could be anywhere about, you know, 188 to 195, somewhere in there.
Yeah.
You can just tell when it's really nice and tender. The biggest satisfaction when it comes to like a pork shoulder is when you've done it right and you just wiggle out that shoulder blade bulb.
Yeah.
It just slides right out.
You had the biggest smile on your face when you did that, but because
I tell you, I love that every time. Yeah,
that's
absolutely.
That's when it's pull apart. You know, you get it. you know, these forks or these special devices to just kind of pull all the pork apart, and it's nice and juicy. It's perfectly cooked. Because with that probe, mm-hmm. you can monitor the temperature from, you know, from anywhere, because it's Bluetoothing to your phone. So you don't have to go out there and check things, anything. So, you know, when it's done, it's done. And, you know, you season it, you slow cook it. And then at the end is when you put the barbecue sauce in, if you do that. Some people prefer it without the sauce.
Yeah, I'm definitely on that same school of thought. I like to have the sauce as like a side, and I can always add to it to my liking, but I really want to get that initial smoke pork flavor that's right. inside of it and not overdo it.
Hey,
you know, a great way, like in between it, you can even spritz it spray it with like a little apple juice as well.
Yeah.
That adds to the nice bark that's coming in the outside of it. And when you get to a certain level, let's say maybe pulling about 160 degrees, sometimes you could take that out.
Right.
Wrap it up in a butcher paper as well, too. Pop it back on the smoker and just let it just kind of finish off slowly, you know. Resting is always a great option
for
anywhere up to like 3-4 hours.
If people want to get more info on the cooking school, on recipes, on the restaurant, mm-hmm. Where do we go on the web to get more information?
You want to go to WeberGrillRestaurant.com, click on Cooking Plus, and you will look to see. We have all the monthly calendars there with interest dates and everything else. I mean, you got everything right now from coming up here with Father's Day. Some great options. Come to the restaurant. You know, let us cook for you. This is, you know, Dad's favorite anyway. He loves grilled food.
Right, right.
Well, you know, all three Chicagoland restaurants in Indianapolis are going to have reservations still available. June 8th, I'm doing a Daniel Hammond collaboration class with he's the pit master with Smoky Soul Barbecue.
Okay.
June 15th in Lombard, Ultimate Father's Day grilling class.
Okay, we're gonna have to get all the other information on the web because I'm flat out of time here. But Chef Klaus Lauder, Weber Grill Restaurants and Cooking School out in Lombard. Great to talk to you, pal. And Chef, we'll talk to you soon.
Great
Thank
to
you.
Talk to you, Chef Dean.
Take care.